Everyone's got those songs that make them go, oh man, I felt that. Songs that resonate with their own individual circumstances and bring them together with others through shared connection. But the same song is guaranteed to speak to different people in vastly different ways. So join Date and I, once childhood neighbors in Marathon City, Wisconsin, as we talk through the songs that have struck a chord with us. We'll discuss the similar messages we've heard upon our listens, the lessons we've learned through our own interpretations, and the deeper topics we're navigating as our own unique journeys continue beyond our hometown. Welcome to Marathon Mixtapes. Dayton, what's the song that we're going to talk about this week?
So, we're going to talk about another one of my favorite bands, Weezer. Specifically, we're going to be talking about the 10th and final track of their 2016 self-titled album, sometimes also known as the White Album, and that track's name is Endless Bummer. Very, very timely recording session here, Jordan, because this song is all about the melancholy of a, not just a summer ending, but a summer that might not have lived up to expectations. Now, Weezer, as I said up top, one of my favorite bands. You look at me and you're like, yeah, that guy likes Weezer for sure. But what I really enjoy about Weezer specifically is that they're this pop-friendly rock that really ranges from some pretty corny stuff all the way to some brutally, brutally authentic messages and poetry, if I can be so bold as to say. And there's merit to each approach, and I've enjoyed songs from them that inhabit each of those spaces. And to me, Endless Bummer kind of inhabits both. On top of that, it's just not a super well-known song by them, and I think that's absolutely criminal, because I hope as you took a listen to it, there's a lot of brilliance here to unpack. And what I hear when I listen to Endless Bummer is kind of this mopey, dark campfire song. It starts with just the acoustic guitar and vocals, and even though there are these harmonies going on in the back, the vocal performance has sort of inherent loneliness to it, and of course that's reflected in the lyrics, which we'll dive into a little bit here. It's almost an FU message to the soft, toxic positivity of typical summertime music, which is kind of funny because Weezer is so deeply indebted to bands like the Beach Boys and the Monkees, you know, some of these bright, kind of surf rocky adjacent artists from the mid-century. And the way that this song evolves feels so much like my sadness sometimes, and so much like my cynicism, my sense of disappointment. So as this song grows, it's not just this campfire song anymore, not just the acoustic guitar and a few singers. It rolls on into this full rock cascade. It's a guitar solo that not only has some technically impressive melodies ingrained within it, but it really captures that sense of a bitter ending, this kind of credits roll moment. And I go back to it often when I'm feeling a little dour, a little like that sadness that's infused with a little bit of anger and kind of presents itself as, I've been saying here, disappointment and sometimes even regret. And the song really makes me feel less alone. There's a lot of punch to this song, and I think a lot of that is owed to its sense of humor. I think it's a very, very funny song, and comedy and music is a really powerful combination, not something that we've necessarily discussed here on an episode yet. So I really wanted to start off by asking you what you thought of some of these lyrics, what you thought of that structure. Did you get some laughs out of this song? And were those laughs kind of twinged with the darkness that I've kind of noticed and glabbed onto here?
Yeah. So I guess before I jump into like this song specifically, I am familiar with Weezer, but I wasn't familiar with this song. And I will say that like Weezer is a band that I think are very musically technical. Like they know what they're doing. And honestly, like if you can collab with Weird Al Yankovic to make a cover of Africa, like I feel like you know what you're doing. But as I was listening to this song, I definitely got those vibes of like the summer vacation, the vibes of just relaxing by the beach, and then juxtapositioned with the lyrics of kind of just sad lyrics. It was very interesting for me, and I've heard this song described as Island in the Sun but sad, and
yeah, that's about right. If anybody's not super familiar with Weezer's discography, I mean, most people know Island in the Sun.
Yeah, that's like kind
so
of
that
their,
is sort of
like
a great inroad.
Yeah,
yeah, that Beverly Hills, Buddy Holly, they've got some big hits, but this song feels like a deliberate subversion of that in such a fun way.
Yeah, and I was like listening to the song earlier, and I listened to Island in the Sun immediately afterwards, and it's such a fun pairing because like Island in the Sun, I think it's like slower in terms of tempo than Endless Bummer, but like the lyrics are more uplifting than Endless Bummer. So it's like the juxtaposition of slow, like meandering song, but with happy lyrics versus a more upbeat tempo, but like really sad lyrics. And there's a lot of like, at least in Endless Bummer, there's a lot of like ambient, like background noises. Like you can hear like beach sounds, like waves washing up on the beach and like seagulls and stuff.
Right.
To really like paint that picture. I do want to, I want to say this now, just before we get too deep into like the philosophy of the song. But honestly, like I think summer is the worst season. And I mean, that's my personal opinion.
Okay.
And so,
yes, please go on because I just had this conversation with my wife.
Yeah. Like, and so I'm already on board with like Endless Bummer being this like summer anthem, but like also with the subtext of everything sucks. So I'm like, yeah, summer sucks. Summer is the worst season for me. Honest part of it for me, I think is because I'm a northerner. Like northern U.S. like I was shaped by the cold harsh winters, and then the summers just become too hot.
You were born in it.
Yeah. And the summers are just like too hot for me, and especially like for, you know, us growing up in Marathon, we got the whole season, like all seasons. And some people don't understand sometimes, depending on where you grow up and where you live. Like for us in Marathon, what I remember is that like we're in like, you know, north central Wisconsin, so the winters are expected to be bitter and cold and like full of snow, which they were, but no one ever also expects the fact that the summers were ungodly muggy and hot.
Yep.
Like we had the extremes on both ends, just harsh, muggy summers and cold, bitter winters. And honestly, I would rather take the winters over the summers for me.
Well, and one thing I'm noticing as I've been a homeowner for now officially a year, just a few days over a year. And not only, so having four seasons, there's a certain charm to that. There's a certain kind of calendar, kind of postcardy kind of element to that, right? Picturesque, that's the word I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. But when you get all four, that means you have to prepare for all four.
Sure.
So now in my garage, it's not just lawn care equipment and grass seed and plants that we still have to plant, even though it's so late in the season now. It's also snow blowers and bags of salt to break down the ice that inevitably forms right in front of my front door. It's a little bit of everything. And while variety is the spice of life, variety also demands a lot of you if you want to be ready.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's why I like, for me personally, I think in terms of seasons, I would rank them fall, spring, winter, summer. And I don't know.
I'm loving like, the fall love.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody's coming around on fall and it's just like, I'm an October birthday, man. I've been there.
You're October. I'm November. Like it's so like, it makes sense why we would like fall, right? Like, cause that's kind of our time.
Yeah. We got to like celebrate around that time as kids and quickly understand like, oh, what's the fun thing to do? You know, one of my first birthdays, we have a picture of it where you're in it. One of my early birthdays was at a pumpkin patch. You were there with some of my other friends, of course.
I think I know.
Do you know what picture I'm talking about?
I think I know what photo you're talking about. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like
we're all standing up and leaning on a fence.
Yeah, yeah. It's like if you took like five or six kids between the ages of like 8 and 12 and told them to make like a Christian rock album cover.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It was amazing. And we're all very stereotypical, like...
Like, on a fence, too.
Yeah, like, 2000s attire, too. Yeah. You know, I think at least two of us are wearing, like, Old Navy USA kind of shirts, yeah. You know. Yeah. But I still love pumpkin patches. And it all stems back to some of those fun moments as a kid. Spending fall celebrating myself and hanging out with my good friends. Mm-hmm. So, you are correct. Fall is number one. Fall is never a bummer.
Yeah, it's never a bummer. But like, anyways, back to like Endless Bummer. And like,
of course,
the summer, the summer anthem for the people who hate summer.
Yes.
Yeah, like listening to the lyrics. Like, I think my favorite line at the end is "Kumbaya makes me get violent."
Yes.
Because just like, this kind of goes back to one of like our previous episodes where there's something about toxic positivity that's just not helpful.
Right.
And I think in the beginning of the song, there's the lyrics was like, she told me to follow the rules, but then that's immediately mm-hmm. followed up with like, not all 19-year-olds are cool.
Yep.
And if I could just like take another aside, just like, who thinks 19-year-olds are cool? Like
19-year-olds.
Yeah, like, I mean, I would say, like, a good chunk of 19-year-olds also do not think they are cool. Like, that's such a tumultuous time.
Fair enough.
The age where, like, you've just become independent, usually, which means, like, you have no idea what you're doing.
Right, yeah, and you're really trying to find yourself. Yeah, and I think what's interesting about this, the age being such a kind of fixation of this character's story right away is when Weezer came out with this album, I believe they were all in like their late 30s, early 40s, maybe even a smidge older. So okay. This song is very reflective in that way about the summer love, right? I think it goes beyond that because the song is very efficient in its lyrics. You know, it starts off with immediately, like the tension is clear. This sense of despair in, I just want this summer to end. That's the first line. There's a lot of story there, especially when it's placed within the context of the atmosphere of this whole song. You're like, okay, this character's going through something. But it really evolves into something more. But I appreciate the sort of retrospective approach to this because they were older men when they were talking about this. So they're looking back on this 19-year-old age, this age of transition that you're alluding to, and the relationships that can come with it, and how much it can really sting, and how much it can really affect us in the moment during those years, but how we might evolve. There's something to be said about the transition there between the age of the singer and the age, I would say, of the character that they're inhabiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, like, I think there's, like, this image that, you know, Weezer's trying to portray with, like, a main character of the song being, you know, like, 19. And in that, like, time in their lives where, like I said, they've become fully dependent, but they're not sure what they're doing. So they're trying to, like, explore and then running into a lot of, like, troubles and tribulations, right? Because, like, this song is also about a failed romance. There's a lot of... like heartbreak and things like that. And as I'm like kind of reviewing the lyrics a little bit, it reminds me there's that image of the song being a 19, 20 year old person going through life on his own and kind of running into some obstacles and heartbreak and things like that. But it also, because of like the summer motifs and stuff, it also reminds me of a summer tourist town, something like a Wisconsin Dells, because, you know, staying on the Wisconsin theme, where it's like, it's clearly like a summer tourist town that is like dead in the winter because it's done for the year. It portrays this image that honestly, like, is probably another reason why I'm not a huge fan of summer, is that out of all the seasons, like, summer seems to be the one that like puts on airs the most because of like some weird expectation that's been developed. And I kind of get that feeling from the lyrics as a person, you know, as a young adult.
Yeah.
Trying to be cool because you don't want to be seen as like a loser.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, now that you're an adult, you're starting to understand yourself a little bit more and understanding like your shortcomings and things like that. And like in Endless Bummer, there's a line, you know, like, I count my steps because I'm OCD. And I also, like, I feel that like connection to like those summer tourist destinations, because there's a lyric in the song as well where it's, my heart is so landlocked, nothing but tourist shops.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a curse, you see. And like those lines alone kind of just paint that picture of those like summer tourist towns as well. It's like locked in this weird expectation that other people have for them. And then they end up being sometimes like fake, but just more specifically like not genuine, you know, because of those expectations people think other people have for them. And that conflict of, do I try to be cool or do I try to be me? And like, can I make me be cool? And then realizing that it's not necessarily compatible.
Right.
And you end up being, or you end up trying to be this image of cool that's not who you are, and then ends up being not cool because of the disingenuineness, I guess.
Absolutely. No, we're totally on the same wavelength with this. This is one of my favorite aspects of this song. I love that the character is playing off of their environment, right? They feel like this sort of circular reflection of themselves in their environment, and then they also see the environment in their own heart. Like, their heart is nothing but tourist shops. Like, what they're feeling right now is like this cheap kind of thing being stripped away that's not lasting. That's what a hell of an image. And I appreciate what Weezer does here for another reason too, in that the White Album is kind of a love letter to the state of California, where I believe the majority of the band is from, if not all of them. And this song is kind of an indictment of California and beach culture. And as you've been noting more pointedly, summer, and like how kind of, oh gosh, what's the word I'm looking for? How passing like summer vacations can be, or how limited they can be in scope. Like, everybody sees vacations and tropical getaways and romance on the beach, you know? Oh, I enjoy long walks on the beach. Oh, that's ideal. But that doesn't cure everything. And I think this character is going through a coming to terms with, not only is there love passing, but their whole environment might be kind of insufficient for them in this moment. And the things that they're being surrounded with are things that they're feeling in their heart. They're like, oh man, I just can't escape the thinly veiled kind of insidiousness of everything that's going on. You know, it's pervaded me and it's in my environment. So I just want it to end. So I think this song captures such a unique kind of grumpy heart sickness that really resonates with me. Not necessarily for, let's be real, I haven't had a whole lot of like romantic relationships, and I'm very fortunate to be in a very healthy one now. So I haven't had to deal with like a whole lot of completely world-changing kind of breakups. You know, a few, but who doesn't? But there's something about this song that just captures disappointment, just distills it down into this pure feeling for me. And I know I've gone into summers with expectations for, oh man, once I get through this school year, then the summer's just going to be great. Or once I get through this next week of work, then it's Memorial Day, and then summer's after that, and it's going to be smooth sailing. It never is.
Hot girl summer.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Don't we all want a brat summer? I just... I honestly don't even know what that means.
I don't know about you. I want a brat summer.
Oh, on it. Yeah. You know, screw hot dogs. I'm a brat boy all the way. I mean, this is a podcast about Wisconsin boys. We got to be real, right?
Exactly.
So, and I've even gone into other chapters of life with that expectation too. Like, once Christmas season comes around, things will be much more peaceful, much more joyful. Or even once I get a house, then, then I'll be, quote unquote, living the American dream, and everything will fall into place. This song is my safe space when I realize those things and things like them weren't the cures that I told myself and other people told me that they would be. I appreciate having a song that gives me that. I think that's a powerful idea and not something I find too much elsewhere, really. I haven't found another song that quite inhabits that same space.
Mm-hmm. And also, lyrics aside, musically, I think it does a great job of representing the like end of summer. This was something that I noticed like listening to it recently, just kind of get myself up to speed for this episode, that unlike a lot of songs, like it's got a guitar solo, but it's like literally at the end of the song. And You know, a lot of songs, typically if you follow like more traditional formats, you have like verse chorus, and then you have the solo. And then after the solo, you come back to the chorus as a way to tie it up. Endless Bummer like ends the song with the guitar solo that just transitions to just beach noises for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it's done. For me, that like really represents just like the end of like a season.
Yeah. And I just wanted to add too, I think this is ultra important for Weezer too, because I'm a huge fan of the band and a huge fan of the sort of brains behind Weezer, Rivers Cuomo, who's the lead singer and primary songwriter. He's been a slave to the rock format for a long time. So he wrote the first two albums with the band. They're slightly different lineup, but the Blue Album, as it's known, and then Pinkerton, really wrote those in what I understand to be a fairly intuitive space. They were like, okay, we know what kind of band we want to be. We're going to write these kinds of songs. Blue Album was very much like a slightly darker twist on the Beach Boys, a little bit of a Nirvana influence. It's a legendary album. It's so, so good. And then Pinkerton kind of doubles down on the darkness. It's a brutal album. When I was talking about brutal honesty and like this kind of sincerity to a fault earlier, Pinkerton is the album that represents that for this band. There's a lot of sort of dark admissions that don't exactly make for appealing music upon first listen, but you listen more and you're like, oh, okay, this guy's just, you know, digging up the darkest trenches of his mind and putting it to paper and venting it out that way. So it's like, okay, credit to you for that. But then after that, Rivers went to an Ivy League school and really wanted to break down what makes a pop song good, what makes, you know, bands like their big influences like the Beach Boys or even their sort of pop contemporaries, what makes all of them successful. And so the Green Album, as it's known, their second self-title, is really rooted in verse chorus, guitar solo. The guitar solo is much less interesting than it was on their first two albums. Sorry for fans of the Green Album, but I could go on and on about this. They use that guitar solo as just sort of it's just a repetition of the vocal melodies represented in the guitar, so it plays it very, very safe. They mm-hmm. could have done that with Endless Bummer too, and the fact that, as you said, it bucks tradition and ends with this guitar solo. Not only is that them kind of grabbing you by the collar a little bit and saying, hey, listen to this one, we're changing things up a little bit and you should really listen because we're trying to say something, but it also represents the way that the season kind of just feels like a big crashing down, and then suddenly it's that quiet fall time and the loud noise that you expected over summer. Was it ever there? Was it what you wanted it to be? Did it give you what you needed? And maybe it didn't. And in this case, for this character, it really didn't. So it really captures that mm-hmm. moment when you're sitting down and realizing, oh, there's a chill in the air now. Huh, I wonder what happened. And you look back and you're like, maybe I wasted some moments. Maybe I made some mistakes. Maybe some people hurt me. And that can happen any time of year. But I think people kind of least expect it in the idyllic times of summer.
Yeah, I think that was like a good phrase where that you had where it's like, what happened, or like, when did it end? Because I feel like that's also how seasons go normally, like in a place with seasons where you don't realize the season is over until you're well into the next season.
Yeah.
Because of the way kind of like things happen gradually. And I get that same vibe from the song in not just terms of season, but like in terms of the character of the song, kind of reminiscing about a past romance and kind of like looking back on that relationship and like, oh yeah, it's over.
Yeah.
But, and like the weird like realization that it's over happening like well after it actually ended.
It's a heartbreaking song in that way too. Yeah, if we want to sort of focus in a little bit on the romance that's presented in this song too, I think there's some really funny lines that represent the kind of embarrassment that can happen after you split with somebody. Like there are some specific lyrics that talk about when this character is seeing their former partner out and about, you know, in this California environment. And the way he responds, I think, is very, very funny. So I want to pull up the lyrics specifically because they are very detailed. They capture these really subtle moments that I think are really, really funny. I put my jacket over my head. I'm trying not to stare at her chest. I can't even dance in the dark because my headphones are still on the seat of her car. Weezer doesn't always have this kind of, you know, I said poetic earlier when I was introducing this song, and I really think there's a poetry to this, not necessarily because of the meter or the structure or the specific wordplay, but just like that ability to notice very, very specific details and what they represent to these characters in that moment. You know, putting your jacket over your head, mm-hmm. that's like, okay, really embarrassed, like, don't even want this person to see me, and yet they're still kind of objectifying their former partner, and... I can't even dance in the dark. Obviously, Dance in the Dark is a, you know, the Bruce Springsteen song comes to mind, you know, very sort of stereotypical. Not to discredit that song, because I adore that song too, and that would be a fun one to even talk about. But that one sort of got like a idyllic kind of romance to it. You know, you think about the music video where Bruce Springsteen is dancing with Courtney Cox, and they both look like they were the ambassadors of the 80s in that music video. So then it's like this character's like, oh, I can't even do that. Like, I can't even just have kind of blind, silly fun because music, my sort of pathway to that, is cut off right now because I can't, if my headphones are still on the seat of her car, he knows exactly where they are. I think that's such a fun mm-hmm. detail
and it's showing kind of the pettiness of this romance and the fact that there might have been depth lacking from the get-go, even when there were joyous moments in this hypothetic relationship. But the character's really struggling now and just being like, ugh, I don't even want to see her, but oh, look at her. It's I think that contrast is not just funny, but as I said, kind of heartbreaking, right? It's very real. It's got some of that brutal honesty that Weezer has presented in the past without losing their kind of witty, nerdy rock kind of vibes at the same time.
Yeah, honestly, like, there's a lyric like earlier in the song where it's this bummed out feeling that she's over me, I think really exemplifies that like pettiness that sometimes, like, even if you know a relationship is over, I feel like sometimes you can get into a mental state of pettiness that you can feel like disgusted that the other person has gotten over it faster than you.
Oh, yeah.
And it, like, that single line reminded me of, I don't know if you know the song Forget Me by Lewis Capaldi. That was like a big popular song for a while when it came out. And like that whole song is just about that feeling where knowing that your ex has gotten over you is like the biggest gut punch, because it's, in a way, it like kind of puts you down because like you think of that situation and you're like, really? Was it that easy to just move on from me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it does, you know, in a person's defense in that position, right? It does make you feel small in a way. At the same time, like, everyone's living their own lives, right? Yeah. And you don't want to get stuck in a position where you're just, like, pining over the past.
Yeah.
But it does, like, still feel like kind of shitty when you realize that you've been in a relationship with somebody, it didn't end great, and then all of a sudden, like, that the person that you've shared time with is just like moved on completely and faster than you expect, and you're like, well, fuck me, right? Like, oof.
Right. There's, I think, one of our worst instincts, but one I think is all too familiar for anybody who's been in a romantic relationship that's had to end. When you split with a person and suddenly you realize, oh, wait, their whole life didn't end once I left it. Like, and part of you, there's like a really dark part of you. And I think one that is present in the song too. There's a part of you that's like, their life should have ended because I was out of it. Like, and I'm not talking about like a literal ending, but like, oh, they should have nothing now because like I was like the main character of their story and now I'm not part of it. So what plot are they following, kind of thing? That's an incredibly selfish thing. But I think at our worst moments, a lot of us feel that way, feel like they should really be going through something to realize their regret. I think this character certainly feels that way at times. And I really appreciate how Weezer packages up some of those darker instincts in a really poppy, funny package. Emphasis on the funny here in this song. I think to further add some dimension to the darkness that this character feels, this character is like using humor as a defense mechanism, which is something I know I do. You know, I try to deflect by saying something self-deprecating, and goodness knows that this character does, or I try to make light of a feeling that's actually really, really cutting into me by making a goof about it. And that can be helpful, but at the same time, it can pave over some of the real issues that are happening, you know? Like, this character, boy, like, where do we start with what they're struggling with? Like, their expectations were just way too high. It's like, okay, let's unpack that instead of just being like, oh gosh, this freaking tourist town, I gotta get out of here. I just need summer to wind down so all these people can go away, so she can go away, and we can just move on. And suddenly there's that basically a different kind of silence at the end of the song where it's just beach and seagulls and a little bit of water, and they're like, okay, so where do I go from here? Well, it's like, maybe don't be so quick to just use humor and push things away, right? You know?
Sure, but like, I think you and I have had a lot of conversations about this, but humor is, in essence, one of like the most primal coping mechanisms for just like heartache and the like inequities of the world. Like comedy is just one of those ways we cope with the like ridiculousness of the world.
Yeah, that's very true. But I think there's a kind of humor that glazes over, and there's a kind of humor,
sure,
that encourages more conversation. I think this character is firmly in the camp of, oh yeah, Kumbaya makes me violent. Like, that's a way to kind of avoid the real issue.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, oh, I'm going to use anger as my way out of this, as opposed to thinking about like, oh man, you know, like campfire songs really piss me off. I don't know why. And like, there's another way to be funny about a situation that isn't avoidant, I guess. And that humor really, that more positive, constructive sense of humor really is what you're talking about. It's, I think it's corny, but when we're all laughing at the ridiculous of something, I think maybe that's the difference. Like, humor has to be inclusive. We have to like all like when with the people in the room, it's like, we have to be laughing at the ridiculousness of something. If we can all agree that it's ridiculous, we can sort of unpack that together. I think that's a real powerful moment within humor. And that's really what we need to seek. Like, humor can be exclusionary. Humor can be, as a way, like I've been saying, a way to deflect, a way to avoid. But to joke about something and say, like, you know, observational humor, you know, if we want to get into sort of the stand-up lingo behind all of this, observational humor is kind of looked down upon once in a while, where it's like, oh, it's a little milquetoast, it's a little pedestrian, right? But I think, you know, comedians like Jim Gaffigan, just for an example, you know, really do bring it back to basics. And Jim Gaffigan is like one of those guys that I can laugh with my parents, with my grandparents, with some extended relatives who I don't have a whole lot in common with, because he points out the silliness of some pretty essential things. And that can be a starting point for a lot of people. So I think there's something to be said about that, where,
yeah,
what is humor doing? Who is humor including? Is humor forming like a shield around somebody, or is humor kind of bringing all these people around a proverbial campfire and saying, hey, come here, warm up, we're all cold and we're all trying to figure this out? You know, kind of funny to talk about it in terms of that metaphor, because this character is kind of lampooning the whole campfire song idea and that sort of toxic positivity, you know?
Yeah, I totally get that. The whole like toxic positivity, when like, it reminds me of like the scene in the movie Zoolander where I think it's like Will Ferrell's character, where he's just like, am I the only one taking crazy pills here? Like, what is wrong with all you people? Like, it's like, are you guys like part of some weird cult that I just do not understand? And it just does not feel like any of this is like grounded in reality.
Yeah. And I think Summer can kind of feel that way too, in kind of a general way. You know, there's so many festivals going on. There's huge fairs being set up. Like, those are inherently facades. You look at like the funhouse kind of spray painted, airbrushed tapestries of like Elvis goofing around with an alien for some reason. It's like, okay, what are we pretending this is again? Like, what, we make these little tiny communities and they're all these just goofy little details of Americana, and Mm-hmm. None of it has any substance, arguably. If you enjoy Affair, that's totally fine. I do too. But like, summer comes with these baked in kind of performative activities.
Yeah.
I think you could argue the same for winter too, with some of its holiday kind of commercialism, the traditions that we hold on to simply because they're traditions. But I think it's very clear when you listen to this song, the kind of promises that summer makes for people and how it often falls short.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think it goes back to kind of what I was saying before, where it's just like, it just lacks that genuine energy because it's trying to create this, like, fabricated image of fun, you know, like when it's done well, like, yeah, you can enjoy it and it is fun. But when you like look past like the surface layer, you quickly realize like this is just something that was intentionally fabricated and constructed rather than something that is just like natural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to bring it back into the romance space too, like,
mm-hmm.
there's this idea of what a summer love is, you know, you meet somebody on the beach and ooh, they're wearing something kind of skimpy, but nobody notices but you. And it's just like, oh, so you have eyes for this person. Oh gosh, I think about the Homestar Runner bit where it's like Strong Bad once. He's like, I want a modestly hot girl to get me through the hard times. Like, that's like kind of,
you know,
the
what?
Impression
honestly,
sometimes people have.
That's a mood.
God. We should do like a They Might Be Giants. So we got to do experimental film at some point. Homestar Runner comes with some great music too. But I digress. There's something about that where everybody has an expectation of, oh, I'm going to meet like the kind of quirky girl or the kind of quirky guy, and they're going to notice me too. And we're going to make out under the bleachers, or, you know, after like all the practices have ended for the year. So it's like this kind of desolate liminal space. And, oh, we're going to go to the soda shop. Like, it's also very tied into like ideas of the American dream too, mm-hmm. you know? And it's, everybody has that expectation, even though love at any time of year, love during the summer, like, takes all sorts of different forms. So this character, I get the sense that they went into it with some of those idyllic expectations and didn't get the kind of Polaroid picture that they wanted to walk away with and reminisce about when they found it in a shoebox, and, you know, they found it in a shoebox 40 years later, right? Like, I get the sense that this character wanted all of that and got none of it.
None of it. Yeah. Well, it's like, right, again, when you're like a young adult, you have these preconceptions of what it means to be successful, whether it be in like romance, you know, or in like life in general. And you get into this weird thought process that there's only like one correct way to succeed in life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you try to pursue that. And then, you know, for some people, it just doesn't work out because they're not that type of person. And then it's actually like when you understand that and then just be yourself rather than like a person you think you should be, that's when you start like seeing the real success, because you don't need to put on a mask or put on airs to be something that you're not. Because honestly, that, like, as someone who has, I guess, done that a little bit in his like early 20s, like, it gets exhausting and it's just not useful, because then people have this image of you that is not correct.
Yeah. And exhausting. That's such a great word here, because I get that sense from this character too. Like, they're tired. They want the summer to end so they can reset. Mm-hmm. Like, that's another dimension to this, and a real element of putting on a facade, having expectations, putting so many of your chips on that expectation and losing, right? So, no, I'm glad we're talking about it from that angle as well of, like, you have this expectation, you kind of fake it to try to get that thing, and then you lose yourself along the way. I mean, we've even talked about that a little bit here back in our first episode. You had asked, like, if there was, like, some element of life that I feel like I missed out on, or a chapter, or an element that wasn't part of my life that I feel like, oh, I might have benefited from. And, you know, I talked about having kind of the Judd Apatow experience of being a teenager and, you know, drinking underage, getting caught at a party kind of thing. Like, I feel this weird sort of nostalgia for that, even though I never had that experience. And who knows, even if I had, like, what they would have done for me, you know? So I think leaving those expectations at the door, taking life for what it is, sounds silly to say it out loud, but, like, that's the way to experience life, right? Take it as it is, and, you know, you might be surprised by not having your expectations fulfilled and appreciating instead what life gives you.
Yeah. And, like, speaking of, do you have any moments that you can think of when you were younger that, like, you were trying to not necessarily fit in, but, like, fit into, like, a stereotypical image that was not necessarily who you were, but it was just something that you felt like you had to do?
Yeah, I can. I think back very specifically to, like, middle school, where I had a lot of exaggerated confidence. That sounds very silly for me to say. If you know me at all in real life, it's like, what? At what point did Dayton try to have bravado? Like, that's weird. I don't like that. And I didn't. I don't either. Looking back, I don't like it either. But I think I very vividly remember having kind of the, speaking of Homestar Runner, kind of like the strong baddian kind of confidence where it's very, very obviously not worth anything, you know? Like, to give a very specific example, we wrote storybooks and drew them in one of my middle school English classes, and the intent was to, like, oh, write a story for, like, children. And I don't think I necessarily took that project seriously. What I ended up writing was, like, it was a fun little story about, you know, a bunch of anthropomorphic cat characters being, like, in a rock band together, and they win Battle of the Bands or whatever, you know, because they practiced hard kind of thing. Very stereotypical kind of surface level message. But that's really not the important detail. The important detail is we had to write author bios too. And mine, it ended with, he is much cooler than you.
Wow.
Like, Dayton Hammond is this from this person. He's much cooler than you. Like, that, I don't know where that came from. Like, this weird, like, I gotta.
So wild to me.
Right. That's what I'm saying. This, like, weird, like, why did I feel the need to joke about being, like, the main character in the room? I think it was because I was really insecure that I wasn't, you know, this idea that I wasn't the hero of everybody else's story. And I didn't acknowledge that at that age. And looking back, it's so obvious, right? So I think I needed to go through that to help myself come to that realization. But that's the big example that comes to mind. I remember even making, like, jokes and playfully teasing people in class, trying to be kind of like the class clown. And that's also not me at all, but it was the idea of cool that was fed to me. So I needed to give it a try. I needed to try those shoes on, and it didn't work for me, and that's okay. But I'd be curious to hear from you as well, since that's such a stark difference from my actual personality. Has there been a really far reach that you've tried to make with your personality and something that you've tried to put on that really didn't fit?
Yeah. I will say, like, the first thing I think of is not necessarily that it wasn't a good fit, but like in college, I think I, so like, you know, looking back, like I've always been kind of like more on the shy side and more introverted type of like personality. And when I was in college, I think like I tried to morph that like shyness into like a cool loner type aloofness.
Okay.
That like, oh, like I don't really care. I just do my own thing. And but it like it was kind of like a masking of like my shyness as a form of just, no, I want to be alone because I'm like, I'm used to that kind of like smoking a cigarette in a leather jacket type of thing. And then like, I wander into town. And then before you know it, I wander out kind of thing. And
yeah.
And I remember like, I was leaving a party in college with like my roommate. And I remember him being like, are you okay, man? And I was like, what do you mean? It's like, you were just like so aloof at that party. And I remember seeing, it's like, oh, I'm just tired. But like when I think back on that conversation, it's just like looking back, it's like, yeah, at that party, I was pretty aloof. And it was primarily because I didn't know a lot of people at that party. It was like, you know, organized by like a friend of a friend of a friend type of thing. And it was like a big party. So like anybody who had like the smallest connection to this person was like invited. And because I didn't know a lot of people, I kind of like kept to myself because, you know, and this is all like kind of stemming from like my shyness, but at the party is just like kind of playing it off as like, I'm the cool loner type that doesn't talk to people because that's just who I am. When in reality it's just, oh no, it's just because I'm really shy and I'd love to meet new people, but like I am like a little uncomfortable in this situation with a lot of people I don't know. I feel like I've had that persona in a lot of different situations of like parties and get-togethers and gatherings. And when I think about that, I'm like, that's not really me, because I feel like I am pretty wacky and quirky, especially when it comes to my humor. And at the same time, like I have a very, like a big part of my sense of humor is very dark, but in like a lighthearted kind of way. I honestly, that stems from like me using humor as like a coping mechanism. And
yeah,
I try to use it as something productive. Like you said, like you can have humor as a coping mechanism to either avoid the truth or to try to highlight the ridiculousness of the truth. So like, you know, to engage or not. And I try to like use my, I guess, dark sense of humor to like, to be more on the side of like highlighting the inequities and ridiculousness of like the universe in terms of like how it treats humanity.
Absolutely.
And yeah, so like growing up, and it did happen a lot in like my college years, like there's just this persona of me that's like reserved, aloof, maybe quote unquote like cool loner, even though it's honestly not that cool, when it was just kind of like a, not necessarily defense mechanism, but more of just like trying to mask or portray like my shyness as something cooler than it actually is or was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what I certainly felt when I was, again, putting on this sort of false bravado, and I'm sure it's what you felt too when you realized that the world wasn't necessarily responding to that cool guy leaning up against a wall in the corner. It's like, oh, nobody talks to him kind of thing. He doesn't talk to anybody. He's just here. Like when the world doesn't respond to the masks that we put on, that's a really unique kind of resentment and another kind of human experience that I think Endless Bummer really captures well this the sense of, oh, I did all the right things, or oh, I became this person. Why did that not get me X thing? Why did that not get me to Y place? Why did that not allow me to obtain Z objective? You know, I think that kind of that feeling of realizing, oh, yeah, I faked it and I didn't make it, is a very, very specific kind of self-hatred, right? You know, but to spin it a little bit more positively too, you know, when you do find the people who really appreciate the person behind the mask, like, you know, in recent years, very much especially, I've seen you get much more just generally excited about things, you know, just being in some of your favorite restaurants with you, or hearing you talk about it, like Cook Serve Delicious, just for example, just hearing you talk about every element.
Oh, God, I love that game.
Yeah, and I love that you love it. Like, the fact that you'll just text me about, like, oh, here's this clip where this voice actor, like, just delivers this line really well, or there's this one specific joke that is just really resonating with you. Like, that
a baked potato.
Sure. That that's like my favorite kind of Jordan, you know, and I think that's very true to you. So when you have those connections with people who are like, yeah, Dayton, you don't need to pretend that you're the coolest guy in the room and be like kind of jockey for some reason. It's like, I know that's not you, and that's totally fine. Like, I feel very fortunate to have a lot of people, you included, who don't ask me to put on anything extra to exist in the same space.
Yeah. I mean, and that was how, like, Endless Bummer starts out, like, in the first verse. Like, she told me to follow the rules, but not all 19-year-olds are cool. And, like, that's kind of to your point where you try, like, you have this preconception or, like, notion of what it means to succeed, and like you try to uphold those, I guess, principles, but in the end, like, it's so like antithetical to who you are that it feels even more crushing when it doesn't work out.
Yeah,
because it like feels like a waste of time, because you put in all this effort and energy into doing what you think is right, and then it not working out. And again, like, it gets baked in to the lyrics of the song so much in different facets, where putting on this like facade, right? Again, with the lyrics, nothing but tourist shops. Like, it that's like the picture like it paints. And then just realizing that, why are we doing this? And like, or why am I doing this? And because it's not like working. And then again, ending with the line, Kumbaya makes me get violent, and I just want the summer to end, feels like that, like, realization of just, what am I doing? Let's just move on. Like, this has not worked, and I just need to, like, move on from this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to see any more, like, of this weird, made-up, like, facade of success or confidence or whatever it is that I think is what I should be doing rather than who I am.
Yeah, and I think to sort of further the metaphor of resort towns, vacation towns, kind of destinations, right? I think about some of these all-inclusives, right? They take you to this very specific facility where everything's there. You don't have to leave the walls of this destination. It could be in a far off place that's very, very different from where you live. You know, not to call anybody out, but like a Sandals resort, right? You could go there and you could have that experience there. But did you really understand anything about really where you were?
Yeah.
Did you talk to any natives? Did you hear about like the restaurant that's been there in that town, in that country for God knows how long, right? You know, it's, you didn't actually engage with it. In the same way, where when I was being a big Johnny Bravo type for no reason, and you were trying to play it cool off to the side, that created a little like microcosm for people, like, oh, this is how you're going to engage with me and you don't actually get to see me. And the fact that it, you know, my heart kind of breaks thinking about, you know, those people who I only brushed shoulders with in middle school and I acted like a moron around. Like, that's their idea of me, and it sucks that they didn't get to see Dayton, you know? Mm-hmm. And I heard you talk about it a little bit, too, where you're like, oh, I really would love to, like, meet people. I want to engage, but I feel like I have to give people this other contained idea that doesn't actually connect back to who I am.
Yeah.
And I think that metaphor gets deeper, too, the more that you think about, what are these tourist shop towns all about? They're trying to keep you all there. They're just trying to commercialize. They're trying to get you in and out. They're just trying to get your money. They're not trying to let, they're not giving you that space to have a genuine experience. They just want the patronage. They just want the transaction, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think when we were faking it, that's kind of what we wanted, right? We wanted people to react. We didn't want people to actually step in and be like, oh, Dayton, this is what you're all about, or oh, Jordan, this is what you're all about, I like this. And like that's scary, that's vulnerability. So, and
yeah,
maybe in those moments we weren't ready for it, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like also the problem with that too is you start digging yourself into a hole that it's hard to like reverse, right? Like, you, the longer you continue up this like facade of not being who you are, the harder it is to like actually be yourself, because
yes,
it's like one of those things where like, oh no, I'm in too deep, I have to keep going, otherwise what has this all been for?
Yeah.
And it becomes like this weird like self-fulfilling, or like this not self-fulfilling prophecy, but like a negative, it's a positive feedback loop that is detrimental, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because it just feeds on itself.
Yeah, and I think it really ties in closely with what we were talking about with humor, too. I noticed as we were sort of differentiating how humor can be used in positive and negative ways, I was using the phrase defense mechanism, and you more frequently used the term coping mechanism. And I really think that's the difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
Defense, you know, through humor really means shutting something down. It means shutting something out and containing it within, in the same way that the masks do, within a bubble. It's like, oh, this can exist over here and I don't have to engage with it in a meaningful way. Coping, you know, coping mechanism, a humor as a coping mechanism, that's a conversation with the thing. That's with the thing that you're coping with, right? That's an interrogation. That's sitting down at the table with the thing that you're concerned about, the thing that you're laughing at, the thing that you're wondering about, you know? So it's about disengaging or engaging. What is letting things in and what is playing into vulnerability versus pushing things away and saying, this is all of me that you get to experience, or this is all of you that I'm deciding I get to experience, instead of welcoming in that open channel through what a joy humor is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good way to put it too. It's like the two different coins of, or two different faces of the coin that is like humor.
Yeah.
So I think to kind of end this episode on a positive note, I was going to ask you, like, when was like the last time, or the last really memorable time where you were like unabashedly Dayton, you know, true to yourself, that may surprise people?
Oh, that's an awesome question. I don't think a lot of people know this, but I did my first poetry reading over, oh boy, it was almost a year ago already, I think. It was last September. I feel very gracious for this too, that I've been able to inhabit myself well. I've had a lot of moments that I feel like I've just dialed into myself, you know, since then. But this one, it felt like a particularly momentous one. So I've been writing poetry for years, since basically middle of college, during my creative writing career, my early academic career related to that field. I decided to focus a little bit more on poetry because I really hadn't been challenged in that space before. I'm like, what can poetry do for me? What can I do for poetry, kind of thing? That I wanted to interrogate that. So I ended up taking a lot more courses than I had originally expected related to that topic, and learned so much. So many great professors at UW-Milwaukee and in that program specifically. And I really found a lot of personal fulfillment in poetry. Gave me the freedom to play with language, and I really want to emphasize the word play there. I think it feels like sitting down with Lego bricks and just saying, oh, when I connect these two things, it really makes something interesting, and it reminds me of this, and then suddenly you've built this whole mechanism or scene or something. That's what really poetry ended up being for me, and it became my main mode of expression for many, many years. So I actually had an Instagram page for a long while. It's still up, at DRH Poetry, if you want to go read. But at a certain point, I had started to wean off of it a little bit because it was starting to become a little bit of a chore. But I had an opportunity when I moved to the Wausau area to read some poetry in the Center for Visual Arts in downtown Wausau. And not only that, it was specifically ekphrastic poetry. We were given an assigned piece of artwork from a local artist, and we were asked to write a poem about it. And the piece that I was able to write about was this really melancholic, speaking of, you know, all this talk about seasons, right? It was this sort of rosy, but yet dark and kind of insidious image of, it was a painting of a child standing in the snow outside of like a distant city, and there was a very bright, like blood red, like right around the border of the entire image. So it was like this, to me, I interpreted it as like this dark interpretation of like the rose-tinted glasses, right? Like, what is winter like really offering us? It's really thematically in the same realm as what Endless Bummer is talking about, right? So I ended up writing this poem called Cryogenic, and to sort of, again, play off of that theme of like preserving memories and why do we do it, and when we preserve something and try to hold on to it so tightly, what do we lose, right? So attempted to read in front of a crowd before, but kind of stepped away at the last opportunity and didn't fully embrace it up until that moment when I was able to read this piece at CVA, and it was wonderful. I felt like myself in front of a microphone for the first time in a long time. You know, I pride myself on being like a good speaker, but I'm not perfect. And in being in front of a crowd brings out a very specific kind of nervousness in me, you know, and I just kind of owned it. I felt really, really good sharing what I wrote in that moment. And it was really well received. I even got a laugh out of people through a line I wrote. And it was very much intended to be a humorous line. And I was like, yes, oh my gosh. Like, I tried to say something and I wanted people to have this reaction. And like, I wanted them to hear what I was saying, not just react. You know, like, it wasn't a mask. It was like, hey, I've noticed this thing. Have you noticed it too? It was that humor operating at its highest level. And It worked, for even if it was just those handful of people off to the side laughing. And I am still so proud of myself for going through with that opportunity. I would love to do it again sometime too, but it felt very much like something, not to be overly dramatic, but it felt like something I was destined to do, and it felt so good. So that was absolutely the latest kind of moment.
I mean, that sounds amazing.
Has there been a moment like that at all for you recently? Have you been trying to
tap into Jordan in his purest form?
I mean, I have been trying to do that more and more over the like last, you know, several years now that like I'm out of school and stuff, and actually like being more introspective and stuff like that. And I think the most recent time was pretty recent, where I went to Milwaukee to watch the U.S. National Timber Sports Championships. And I think that is like one of the few things where like there's no question about it. Like, this is something that is me, and this is something that I like. It's basically like kind of, you can imagine it as like lumberjacks sports games, where it's a bunch of different competitive events, and all of them involve chopping wood in some way. And it's something that like I had recently got into, or maybe the last like 3 or 4 years. I would watch the competitions on YouTube, and watching it on YouTube at home by myself, I didn't have to put on any airs or something to react to it. It was just me watching a video, and I was like, this is so fucking cool. This year, last year, one of my old college roommates, who's German, told me that like he got to see the competition last year because it was held at German Fest in Milwaukee, and he's German, so like he goes to like a lot of German heritage type of events all the time with his family and stuff. And for him, like the timber sports stuff just happened to be like there, like he wasn't planning on it. And then he told me, and I'm like, whoa, like it's in Milwaukee, like that's not too far away from where like I live. And so this year I like checked again, it's like, yeah, it's still in Milwaukee for German Fest. And then so like I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go, like this is something I think is cool, and I want to see it in person. And I remember like sending out like group texts to friends in the area to see if anybody would be interested in coming along. And also I remember being like saying like, I'm going regardless, but I'm extending the invitation to, you know, you and my friends, but like, this is something that like I'm going to do. And, you know, I went, I spent the whole weekend in Milwaukee watching like the U.S. National Timber Sports Championships. I saw the women's finals, I saw the men's finals, and I was like sat in the front row, like being super excited. And I think I've shared some screenshots with you, but the competition is live streamed on YouTube, and so you can go watch it on YouTube. And in both the women's and men's finals, like when they pan to the audience, I'm there, like front and center, just cheering on, being super excited. And it was like, you know, one of the things where it's like, yeah, I like this, so I'm gonna like go hard into it and just pursue it. And I remember like afterwards, like sharing with friends, like even my parents were like, oh, I didn't know you liked this. That kind of brought up the thought of like, you know, when I was younger, you know, I had hobbies that I liked, but then I feel like I also had hobbies that I think I should have because other people put, you know, emphasis on certain hobbies to, you know, like fall into like the mainstream of things. But one thing I love about this specific example of like going to watch timber sports is that like it's not necessarily like a very popular thing, but I actually think that's cooler, because I think I've told other people this, but like when you have like these weird niche sports, because they're not mainstream, you know that the average fan is going to be like at a top tier, because most people that, you know, go to these niche sports are probably like friends and family of the competitors. And so you have way less people that are like bandwagon people.
Yeah.
Which kind of falls into what we've been discussing this whole episode, where like, you know, there's those things that you feel like you need to like or need to portray because it's like the quote unquote norm. And I think bandwagon fans are like a good example of that in the sports context.
Yeah.
And so with like these niche sports, again, like it's just, you're going to have less of that because there's no benefit to being like a bandwagon fan for these niche sports because they are niche. And so most fans of these sports are probably like pretty true avid fans. And yeah, like the I remember like the vibe at the competition. Like there wasn't a lot of people, but the energy was great because everyone was like everyone who was there wanted to be there, you know? And like they wanted to be there not because like of any clout you could get from being at that event, but they were genuinely wanting to be there.
Exactly.
That for me, you know, that was like one of the things where it's just like, yeah, I'm a fan. So what? And I'm going to, you know, just go hard into it. And I remember telling this to a friend and he's like, you must be the biggest fan of ESPN8, the Ocho. And I'm like, you better believe it.
That's awesome. I'm so glad that you had that opportunity. Do you know if the competition's going to keep coming back over the next couple of years? Is that something? I mean, I imagine that's something you're going to try to do again. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's in Milwaukee and it's been the U.S. national. So in the U.S. for Timber Sports, there's like a U.S. national competition, and then there's a like a North American Cup that also has like Canadian competitors. So the U.S. nationals, just U.S. athletes. And then there's a North American Cup that is just like everybody, anybody in North America. But the U.S. nationals championship, I think, has been part of German Fest in Milwaukee for the past like good while. And it seems like unless there's like a reason for it to move, I feel like it's something that will just continue to be there in Milwaukee, which is cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I do know like there's an international competition that like if you win the national, you get to compete in the international. And the international like moves around all the time. And that makes more sense because it's international, you want to like spread the hosting duties to different countries for different years just to
right
make it sustainable, kind of like any big international competition like the World Cup or something, or Olympics, right? Olympics always, you know, moves because it's such a financial investment to host it that like you can't really have it in the same place two times in a row. But I think like at least with this, it's gonna continue to be in like Milwaukee hopefully for a while, because if it is, I'm definitely gonna go back next year.
That's awesome. That's great. I love that you had an answer for me too. This is Jordan being excited about things. That's like my favorite kind of Jordan.
To end this episode, if there's anything to take away from it, is that like it's honestly way less effort and more rewarding to just be yourself.
Oh yeah. And if you don't like summer, that's okay. You don't have to pretend. What's the point in trying to pretend? It's the second line.
Yeah.
I love it.
And you know, you're not going to be alone either. There's a lot of people that don't love summer.
Absolutely. And so as we're rolling deep into August here, maybe there's some people who are cheery and a little relieved to see that there's Halloween decorations up in stores already.
Yeah. To our like audience listening out there, if there's any time you feel like you've been unabashedly yourself in a very unique way, you know, I feel like we'd love to hear it. And
oh yeah,
feel free to send your stories to our email, marathonmixtapespodcast@gmail.com. I can only speak for myself, but I'm sure both Dayton and I would love to hear stories of just people living their best lives.
Absolutely. Well, this was a ton of fun, Jordan. I'm glad we had an opportunity to talk about this song, and I was expecting it to be, I mean, it's right in the name, bummer. I was expecting this conversation to be much more subdued, but I'm glad we ended in a place where we talked about just what makes us us and the ways that we stay connected to our truest selves. So thank you for leading the conversation in that way. I appreciate it.
Yeah, as always, these conversations are always a hoot and a half for me. And yeah, just because the song's called The Endless Bummer doesn't mean life has to be.
Amen, brother.
And with that, we'll hopefully see you guys in the next episode. And until then, take care. And thanks again, Dayton.
Thanks, Jordan. Thanks, everybody.